Join me, Professor RPG, as I sit down with friends, colleagues, and special guests as we reminisce and discuss role-playing games that left their mark on us. Expect to see all sorts, from Western style to Japanese and even tabletop. So stay a while and listen, and let us trigger those memories of tales long since completed. Relive that fantasy you hold dear, and come along with us, adventurer, on this quest into the past. Welcome to the RPG University. Class is in session, and today, wow, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, am I right? As always, I am your host, Scott White, also known as Professor RPG, and this week I have the pleasure of welcoming back to the university from GameSpot and former Irrational Passions alum Jessica Cogswell, and from the Pass the Controller podcast and mixologist extraordinaire Brendan Groom to dive deep and to speculate all about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. So consider this your warning, listener. Heavy spoilers ahead for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. We are going to dive into the ending, our theories, all that wild stuff. So consider this your last and final warning. Do not listen to this episode until you finish this wonderful game. But before all that, how's it going, Jess? How's it going, Brendan?
It's going. I'm having a good time. I'm excited to do this.
Yeah, I know, right? I was going to say I'm excited to be back in class.
Yeah. I mean, Brendan, you've recently been on. That was a lot of fun. And Jess, I was looking back. The last time you were here, you were for the OG Final Fantasy VII special, where I had a bunch of people all on to talk about the original leading up to remake 4 years ago. So it's been a while.
All you have to do is just dangle Final Fantasy VII in front of me, and I come running.
Tifa in those swim straps, bikini straps. It's just like you can't avoid it. But yes, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. What a game, I guess. First and foremost, because we haven't really talked about even remake yet, I want to kind of get both of your views and kind of thoughts post remake, like leading into Rebirth. So Jess, we'll start with you. What was your expectation, hopes, like going into Rebirth, and what did you overall think of Remake?
I had the funniest relationship with Remake because when I started it, I played for a few hours, and I remember I had so many people on Twitter, like, I don't know, like tagging me in posts being like, I'm so happy for Jessica. I hope she's enjoying this, because I'm a huge Final Fantasy VII nerd, and I feel like that's the game that people know means a lot to me. And so it was very sweet to see that. I played for a few hours, and then I went to the shower and cried because I did not like it.
Oh, really?
And I felt so dramatic. I'm like, I can't be one of those gamers. I'm not entitled to this, you know, to be exactly what I want it to be. Like, other people are having fun with it. Everybody's really loving it. So clearly, like, this is just a me thing, and I'm just going to get over it. And then I read all of the spoilers for it, because I was like, well, I don't know if I'm going to play it, because I'm being very emotional and a baby about this, but I want to see what's going on. I read all the spoilers, and it hit me. I was like, that's fucking brilliant. I was like, the whisper, the way that they have that set up, like the parallel universe thing. I was like, okay, I'm on board. I get this. I see the vision now. And then I played through the whole thing, and I really enjoyed it. I thought that, you know, there were some parts that were a little bit bloated. But overall, like, I had a great time with it. I think the character work was exceptional. And I went into Rebirth, I guess, kind of just expecting, you know, more of the same. I did not know how they were going to do kind of the open world. I was a bit worried it was going to be maybe very fetch questy, considering how other Final Fantasy games can be. And, you know, I think that was my biggest concern, is it was going to feel like that. It was going to feel, once again, kind of how Remake did, just very bloated, and I'd maybe be a bit annoyed at you know, getting away from the game's fantastic narrative and fantastic characters to do all of this stuff. But that is not what happened. I really, really loved Rebirth, actually. You know, I think there's a few things that I take issue with, but the transformation from what the original was to the open world in Rebirth is just better than I could have ever imagined it would have been.
Yeah.
100%. So overall, though, I went into it with, you know, high expectations, and I feel like they were actually exceeded. I think I expected like, you know, a solid 8.5 game because my mind is now broken from working it in like media and thinking that I have to rate things. But like, that's what I was expecting. And to me, it was more like a 9 or 9.5 type, you know, deal.
Very, very solid. What about you, Brendan?
I'm now worried that I'm going to be the person on this podcast who is the most negative about this. Not in like a drastic way, but I will say one of my favorite things that you've written, Jess, is you wrote something about Final Fantasy VII. I forget. I don't know if it was at GameSpot or elsewhere. Might have been at, where were you before that? Paste? Where were you before?
Uprox is where I was for like a year, but then I interned at Pace though, so like that
maybe
might be
it was I'm trying to remember if it was a thing about just Final Fantasy VII or I don't know, it's gonna drive me insane. I probably should have looked it up before this podcast, but I don't even know if you know what I'm talking about, but it's a great thing about why you love Final Fantasy VII.
Oh man,
it's from a few
it's
years
so
ago.
Funny because I thought you were gonna say it was this paste piece that I wrote about like moments from the original Final Fantasy that I hope they keep in remake. And I was like, oh yeah, that was a fun one. But yeah, God, I don't even know. I've written about Final Fantasy VII too many times.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
So it's
at
all
this
just
point.
Blur.
And you have a lot of really good things you've written.
Yeah, that's also true.
Good in Final Fantasy VII doesn't narrow it down all that much.
No, not at all. But I guess to get back to your initial question, Scott, my relationship with Final Fantasy VII is probably very different from both of yours because I never played Final Fantasy VII growing up. I started my review out over at Pass the Controller with like a little anecdote of my initial like interaction with Final Fantasy VII was the PlayStation Underground demo disc. So I played the bombing mission as a kid over and over again, and that was like essentially the extent of what I had with that game. And when Remake was coming out, I was like, you know, whatever. It's not, I don't know if this is going to be something that I ever, you know, get into. And on a whim, like the day it came out, I was like, oh, whatever, I'll download it and we'll see where it goes. And I have my issues. It's not a perfect game that I think some people like to say that it is. A lot of my issues with it, though, are more so on like the gameplay side of things and not necessarily what Final Fantasy VII is. But I was enchanted enough that immediately after I finished Remake, I downloaded the original game and I played through that. So I essentially drank the Kool-Aid in Midgar and got taken away on a journey. But coming into Rebirth,
Maka will fuck you up.
It really will. coming into Rebirth, I was not. Again, I don't want to be like the hater, but like when I had finished Remake, I was like, yeah, this is a solid 7 out of 10, and I think I was harsh then because I have definitely softened on the game. I'm much more like, no, it's not a 7. Maybe it's an 8, but it like I had softened on it. Again, a lot of my issues were with like the game itself and not the story or the characters or any of that stuff. But coming into Rebirth, I was like not super excited, even though my opinion on Remake had kind of softened. I was like looking forward to Rebirth. I was going to play Rebirth when it came out. But as it got into like the months leading up, I'm like, yeah, I'm actually, the more I'm thinking about the combat from Remake, I'm really looking forward to going back to that world. I'm excited to see with the way Remake ends. I was very excited to see what this was going to be, how different it would be, how different it wouldn't be. You know, obviously we're going to talk about the end of the game, how the end of the game would be. So I was very optimistic and very excited. And through that 70 hours, I think I've landed on a pretty mostly positive note with some issues, but nothing. It's definitely way better than Remake. Like Rebirth to me is like a whole different world compared to Remake.
I agree with you.
For sure. I remember going into Remake expecting that there's no way that it could live up to the hype. And after playing Remake, I was like, holy crap, it kind of lived up to the hype. So with not, and I completely agree. There are definitely, there's some bloat in Remake. There's some aspects to it that aren't the greatest. Yeah, I think like an 8-ish is like an 8.85 is fair for it. But maybe it was, I mean, up to that point, we had some fair Final Fantasies more recently. So just all the hype surrounding Remake, I was like, I just hope they don't drop the ball. And I don't think they did drop the ball. I think what they managed to achieve with Remake, incredibly impressive. So with Rebirth, I was like, okay, I felt like I knew going into it what to expect and like accurately level set myself. And then after playing Rebirth, I was blown away again with like how it exceeded my expectations. Definitely still not a perfect game, but so solid. Like for me, it's solid 9.95. And I was just like, holy crap, how are they going to continue to like, how are they going to top that? Like, I'm already thinking, how are they going to top this for the finale, the final piece? And it's just, damn, this team knows how to make Final Fantasy VII stuff. So yeah, those were, excuse me, my main thoughts. But I want to kind of hear a bit more about kind of your, excuse me. Excuse me.
Oh, no, you're fine.
Brennan, kind of the blemishes, or the things that didn't quite land with you, Brennan.
For Rebirth or for Remake?
For Rebirth. Well, we'll switch completely over to Rebirth at this point.
I think my biggest issue overall, I reviewed it, I gave it a 9. Like, it was a long thought 9. Like, I was basically, there was a point in that game where I was like, this might be a 10. And then once it passed that point, I was like, this is between an 8 and a 9 for me. And it was having that long discussion within and with a few other folks that I knew were playing the game early about kind of their feelings on it and stuff, to kind of see, like,
I completely agree with you. That is exactly how I felt about it. I was like, I remember texting people and like who were also playing, and I was like, this might be a perfect game. This is everything that I had as a child, like, turned up and reimagined in such beautiful ways that I could have never foreseen this. And then by the end, I was like, oh, God damn it.
Yeah.
I had no idea who else was playing, so I couldn't text anybody because there were moments it's like, oh my God, who has it? I can't just like post on Twitter, hey.
Yeah, this is a tough one to find out who's playing just because of, like, for a lot of reasons, but
just FYI, are you or aren't you? But so what was that moment for you, Jess, where you were like on the edge? Like, what moments kind of push you over? Well, I guess first and foremost, what do people think of the story?
I thought it was phenomenal. I mean, it's very true to the original game. What's funny is there were parts where I was like, is this like a new thing? And then I would look up, a bit from like the original. I'm like, oh God, no, it's not a new thing. It's just, I just kind of forgot about this, you know, small thing that happens here. Like that's amazing that they have that recollection and that they're, you know, going back and they have every single detail. And then I thought everything that was added, particularly like the section in Cosmo Canyon with the Gi, you know, it just, like, there were so many additions that made it so much better. You know, I also think that the stuff with Tifa and Gongaga, I think that talking to like Zach's parents there, and actually having more of a meaningful conversation. I think that the way that Cloud's memory kind of, I don't know, I think that there were so many things that were just done so well, just shockingly well, and felt like it took some of the messiness from the original game, and cleaned it up in a really good way. Because, I mean, that's one thing is I know so many people who played the original. And they're like, well, why didn't Tifa, like, call out Cloud? Like, why didn't, like, some of these, like, the dots were connected a little bit earlier, that some things were kind of funky with timelines and recollections. And I think that this game does a better job of explaining things and sorting all of that out. For me, like, those were some of the highlights. And also just the characters are incredible. Every character is so funny, so fully realized. The voice acting is fantastic. The game is super, super funny, like, mm-hmm. shockingly funny. So,
yeah, it balances those, like, super serious moments with, wait, what did I just watch? Like, what's going on?
Because it does. Game made me cry, like, five separate times. But it also made me, like, burst out loud. Like, oh, my God. Did you all do the chicken side quest in Gongaga?
Yes.
I did not.
God. Oh, my. That to me is, like, such a standout moment. It's such a small, stupid quest. But yeah, like, whenever you do this whole thing where you're chasing down these chickens, and then once you finally catch them all, she rewards you with killing one of them and serving them to you. And it plays, like, the original death music from Final Fantasy VII. And it's just, it's so funny. It's little things like that that just got me.
That's fantastic. What about you, Brendan? I'm curious what that moment was that tipped you on the edge, or, like, that you would, after you passed, it kind of shot it back down from a 9-10 range to 8-9.
I'll echo a lot of some of the stuff that the two of you were already mentioning a little bit, where, like, I think the story overall is very good. I think the story, for me at least, was, like, hitting its peak with the characters specifically, where I think the overarching story is where it fumbles a little bit for me, especially the end. But we'll get to that, I'm sure, at some point. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm trying to pinpoint, like, the exact moment. I don't know if there's, like, a one exact moment, but it a lot of it does come down to, I think, just the pacing of the game. I think that when this game is riding its high, it is, like, the combat is mm-hmm. butter. Some of the side quests are just phenomenal, deeper looks at some of these characters. Like, there was one side quest that you're, like, following a dog from Junon, and it's like
Barrett
talking about, like, wanting to be a better father, basically, or, like, talking out loud about what he's worried about being a bad father. And there are
when she grows up.
Yeah, yes, exactly. There are a lot of good moments that you get with these characters in this game. And I've said this in a bunch of different places, but I'll happily say it again here, because this is one of the things that this game does so much for me that a lot of other Final Fantasy VII related things don't, is played remake, played the original. These characters obviously pop up in other things at points that, you know, maybe they're not canonical, whatever. I've watched Crisis, Advent Children. I have not played Crisis Core. I apologize.
Reunion's worth it. It's a solid game.
Yeah, I'll get to it at some point, probably between now and whenever Final Fantasy VII III comes out. But this game has made me care more about these characters more than anything else Final Fantasy VII related ever has. And I think that's one of the strengths of this game, is that it does a lot more for a lot of these characters. Like, someone like Cloud, who's, you know, for a lot of reasons, is a very stern, stonewalled person, very abrupt answers at times, aside from key moments. But that's who he is, and it's a believable character, and it works. But what works so well, I think, about Cloud specifically in this game as compared to the original, or especially compared to Remake, is because you get so much more time with all of these characters, especially mm-hmm. inside stuff and just doing other things. It makes his kind of standoffishness, or very abrupt answering, or, like, when his response to a paragraph of dialogue is no, like, it works better. I don't know. Like, everyone else being able to shine so much more allows a character who is a little more rigid. It felt so impactful to me. And that's, like, just mm-hmm. one small thing where I think this game excels in, like, really, really beautiful ways is how it handles a lot of its characters in character moments. But I think the pacing is the thing that's like, I'll be riding this game so well. It's doing all the things I want it to do and things I didn't expect it to do. And it's doing it so well. And then it will be like, let's go throw some boxes for a while for no reason. And it's just like, it's little stuff like that, that I think takes such an amazing game. And like, you know, it has its faults. I think it has some weird open world stuff, but overall, it's like you can overlook some of these things because everything else is just riding so, so high.
Yeah.
And that bloat, I think, is where it starts to kind of push the brakes a little bit for me. Because Remake had some of those things for me, too, where it would be like, we're in this underground section and we're going to push cranes really slow. And I get it's in the original, but do we need to do this really slow thing that kind of doesn't really matter? Like, I'm especially with how they handle Rebirth, and there's just so much in here, especially the amount of mini games or mini game like things.
All but the mini games.
They gamify so many things in Rebirth that I think maybe just don't need to be there. And I am not someone that's like against the idea of wanting to pour all this stuff into this game because, hey, maybe, you know, 30% of the people that are playing Rebirth are going to be like, oh, I loved this silly thing from the original. I'm so happy it's here. I just think they maybe could have funneled that into different pockets of the game. So it's like the people that really want to see what this game is and has and look for all of these nuggets from the original or whatever it may be, they're going to go search those things out. They're going to go look for them. I think you have a lot of this bloat start to pop up before you get to Golden Saucer. And then you get to Golden Saucer, and I'm like, a lot of this stuff probably could have just been Golden Saucer. It didn't need to be, you know, strung along. And that being said, Queen's Blood is like one of my favorite parts of this game. So Queen's Blood is immaculate. Nothing wrong with Queen's Blood. But I don't know. I'm just rambling at this point about minigames. But I think that was the point that like kind of started to pull me back a little bit. Like, all right, okay, I get it. I want to see how this ends. What are we doing?
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, it was kind of on your topic or on your point, Brendan, of all the little things that people like were hoping to see. Like every moment I was excited and really interested to see how they would handle it in Rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
I feel we're here and I absolutely loved it. Like for the longest time, like pretty much after finishing Remake, all I wanted to see was how Barrett was going to look in the sailor outfit and Red dressed up as a person. Like I was, those were one moment that I was like, I need to see it. And Barrett, the fact that Barrett loves his sailor outfit and thinks he looks baller in it killed me. Mm-hmm. Like I loved that. I thought it was hilarious.
Because
and
then, he does.
Yeah. And the fact that in my like replay of it, I can have him dressed in it all the time. Absolutely amazing. And then the hilarity and kind of wildness of Red dressing up as a soldier so he could play a card game, I thought was hilarious.
The chapter on the boat that's all about Queen's Blood is a highlight of that game for me. Like the swing of Junon to Costa del Sol is very good. Even though I didn't love everything about Costa del Sol, like that swing of chapters, I think it's three chapters, is very good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was, and knowing what was coming, I almost feel that having played the original Final Fantasy and kind of know what was coming almost enhanced my enjoyment of Rebirth. Like, so the sailing from Junon to Costa del Sol, it's like, you know, you're following Genova, you know, there's going to be like this bloodbath, things are going to go crazy. But then you have this, oh, we're doing a card game tournament. Oh, Red's being silly. He's doing Michael Jackson moves. He like all this stuff. It was silly, and I loved it. Were there any moments for you, Jess, being a huge Final Fantasy OG fan, that really impressed you, the representation here, or that you were really looking forward to, and then just you felt knocked out of the park or kind of stumbled in its execution?
I mean, I think that you kind of, you know, nailed it with the Junon to Costa del Sol and being on the ship. Like, I think that all of those locations were handled wonderfully. And for me, that was when I knew that the game was special. Like, I did those sections and I was like, okay, this is really, really, really good. Especially because, like, at the beginning, you start off, you know, you leave calm, you're just kind of in the grasslands. And it was like, okay, this is teaching me how the game's open world is going to be, which is, I'm not a huge open world game person. I'm not by nature a completionist. So, like, for me, I see all that and I'm just like, ugh. And that's how I am with most games. You know, I have to really, really like the game in order to feel compelled. But with, you know, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, I did feel compelled and I actually really did like the open world aspects of it. But yeah, we got to those sections and I think that's for me when I was like, okay, this is a really special type of game. You know, I think that the way that they focused a lot on you know, the individual characters' stories, right? Like, especially Barrett with the stuff in Coral, and, you know, Tifa with different things in Nibelheim and also in Gungaga. Like, they really expanded the part that she plays there. So I think that they did just some fantastic, like, I really was riding a high for the majority of that game. I was really enamored by it. Even with all the mini games, like, I know that there are a lot of people who, you know, and I think, Brendan, you said, you know, like, gamifying every aspect of it and how that became grating. I do see that and I do somewhat agree with that. I think for me it just wasn't as grating as it was for maybe some other people, because like the rest of it was so good that I was very forgiving, I guess. For me, like, the major downfall happened with the final chapter of the game. I just did not like how certain things were handled. I feel like it kind of was a misstep. But I mean, up until the point where, you know, towards the end, each character has to go down this path and kind of revisit their trauma. You know, I think that I was just all on board that this was the greatest game I've ever played.
What were those moments in the final act that that you weren't a fan of how they were held? I mean, this is a spoiler cast. We can go into everything.
Yeah. So, okay. So it's really just up till, you know, Cloud blocks the sword, Aerith's sword, or not Aerith's sword, God. That would be a change. Sephiroth's sword.
That would be a big twist.
Yeah. And I kind of, so I like the notion, right, of there being this multiverse, which they kind of establish in, you know, remake anyway, but they just expanded it even more so in this one. And I like this idea of Cloud being perhaps because at the end of the game, it's like he's the only one who can see Aerith still, and he's the one who can see the rift in the sky. So it seems like he's very obviously in like a non-canon world while also being in this canon world, which makes sense considering he spends the next portion of the game, you know, in the original, like, kind of going through it and not mentally well. So I think that that's kind of an interesting way to do that. But that said, I feel like it just became very convoluted towards the end. I think that the battles and switching between all these different characters and Zack's presence there, but it not necessarily feeling like it felt more just like, we think Zack is cool and want him to be here rather than having this like whole other storyline planned in this other section and having some real meaningful ways that things connect.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It felt weird to me. It felt very like Kingdom Hearts-ified, which sounds mean, but like 1,000%. It felt more like that when it's like, and I feel like to a certain extent, it kind of takes away from Aerith's death, which is, you know, the reason why everybody remembers that is because it's such a game-changing and just emotional moment, you know, because with this one, it's like he blocks the sword and it's really cool because you get that jolt of like, what's going to happen? And then she still dies, you know, essentially. And it kind of goes into this huge convoluted fight where it's like in the original game, you know, she dies and you have Cloud laying there like sobbing, shaking, saying like, I'm never going to hear her laugh again. I'm never going to, you know, like I, you know, I don't care about the planet. I don't care about your stupid plan. Like, I care about this person who you took away from me, you know, and then it plays that somber music while you fight Genova there. And it's just a really somber, tender thing. It's like the first time that you see Cloud, you know, I don't know, just like really break down and really be emotional. And it's like, yeah, I feel like
Asad crumble, that like, yeah, tough guy from Asad.
And we get that throughout this game more, like earlier in the game, whether it's, you know, him talking to the troops in Junon and kind of getting into that. And you see a little bit more of Soldier Cloud, right? Or, you know, whenever he's doing the date, or whenever he's in Nibelheim with Tifa, like he does have these moments where he kind of drops that. But that was always just such a powerful thing. Aerith's death is so powerful. And yeah, I felt like it kind of just became a bit lackluster and was just a setup for, we know this moment is important, and so we're going to make you, like, I don't know, make you work through all this stuff and think about how cool. It just seems like it doesn't get what made that moment special. And it's just using it as like this jumping off point for making people excited, or for, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah,
and it's something that I wasn't a fan of.
Yeah, my biggest issue, I think, was all the party switching, like the fact.
Yes,
like I enjoyed the forced party switching, like during the game. It's like, okay, I can kind of pick up and learn this new character that I don't usually spend a lot of time with. I liked all that, but for the final boss of the game, like, let me play my preferred party. Like, let me, like, that I've kitted out with all the materia. The fact that it wasn't like, hey, you might, or giving you a break in between the state, like the phases, to equip those party members. It's like, oh, this is the rough party. Okay, we're gonna see if we can pull this one out. but like seeing Bizarro Sephiroth was like, I thought his new like update design was awesome. Like I got so freaking hyped when Cloud and Zack fought together. I think I enjoyed all the moments with Zack, but to your point also, Jess, I 100% agree. It did, like, that big team up did not feel earned yet.
Yeah, it just, like, it was just strange to me. I don't know. I felt like they didn't justify things, or they didn't like fully explain the logic they were working within to, yeah. I don't know. And maybe that's something they'll explore more in the next game. But I think for me, just, yeah, that last chapter was kind of a bit of a flop.
Yeah. See, I think they spent so much time like in the Zack timeline or whatever, showing Cloud in his kind of like Mako poison state and Aerith still unconscious. I think Aerith's going to wake up in Zack's timeline and the two of them will be doing stuff. And then in the final fight, Aerith will appear, or like at some point in the third game, there'll be some world hopping and that Aerith will come over or something. I feel like they spent so much time focusing on how, like Marlene mentioning how she needs to wake up, or Cloud needs to wake up, so when Aerith wakes up, he can save her. But yeah, it was, my mind's still trying to process, and I'm looking forward to all the theory crafting of the ending for the next 4 years.
Yeah, and I mean, it makes sense too with, you know, having Aerith kind of do, 'cause, and I think that that's the best way to, at least that's how kind of I'm interpreting it too, is like, you know, Cloud is kind of in the middle of these two dimensions. He can see Aerith, and, you know, Aerith is still in existence. And in the original game, obviously, like the life stream, and you see Aerith in the life stream, is kind of like what comes back to save. And you kind of, I don't remember if there's like dialogue or something like that, but I mean, it's implied that Aerith has been like doing work within the life stream, right, to like gather that force and save the world. And so it kind of makes sense that she would be in this alternate dimension sort of doing that. And then it's kind of one of those cool things where it's like, this always had to happen because she always had to be there, because she had to be doing stuff on that side with, like, maybe she's with Zack, you know, like in order to save like the original universe. So I think that there is a world in which like it all comes back together and it works really well. But I think that the end for me was just, I don't know. Yeah. I think that it was overly convoluted.
Yeah. What did you think of the ending, Brendan? And kind of the last act of the game?
So I think there are some parts of the end that definitely go on a little bit too long. I kind of like the chapter before. I like the temple part, but I think the temple part is like so long. But there's some like great story stuff there, and like, I don't know, when that clock pops up for like no reason out of nowhere to be like a few hours ago, and then you switch to Aerith. Like, I've talked to everyone about this. The clock thing is just so bizarre to me, because it's like it comes up within the game itself, like in the game, and like I don't know, I'm just saying nonsense. It's just like a ridiculous visual thing that I really appreciate. I don't think anyone else liked it that I talked to. But like, I think this game's end has what both of you have kind of said. It's a little too convoluted for me. Like, I think most of us like to theorycraft and like to speculate on stuff. And I feel like this game, which to me, after playing Remake and how Remake ends, makes it seem like this game is going to defy destiny. It's going to do something different. It's going to change things. And at the end of it, I don't feel like that happened. And I wasn't going into it thinking, I need Aerith to die, or I need Aerith to live and someone else to die. Like, that's not where my mind was at. It was more of like, I feel like something has to be different. Especially because the game, the way that I was feeling throughout the game was, I feel like Cloud is going to kill Aerith. And that's what the game was leading me to believe. Especially when you get to that scene where it's making you play through each character's past, and it's like you're playing through these traumatic events that are not able to be changed. This is your, what you went through. This is your life. This is your fate. This is your destiny. And you do that for everyone except for Cloud. So from that point, I was like, okay, Cloud did not go through this trial, maybe because he's able to alter his fate. Maybe he's able to alter his destiny, or whatever reason. And then you get to this scene at the altar, and I'm still, because I've watched a few other people finish the game now, and have rewatched that scene, because I prior to that, I've only seen it the one time when I beat it. And I wanted to see it again. So when you are going up to Aerith and the whispers are swirling around Cloud, and you're, I don't know if it's the triggers or whatever it is, but you're like holding back the sword, or maybe you are holding the sword to strike her. It's, to me, seems very unclear what Cloud is actually doing in that moment, especially because it would appear as though both Aerith and Cloud don't know that Sephiroth is above them, because it is not until much later in that scene that the feather comes down and then you see Sephiroth. So I still have like confusion around that scene of, were you trying to strike Aerith there, or were you trying to stop the whispers from striking Aerith? Or what was happening there? Was Sephiroth controlling Cloud, and Cloud was trying to fight back? It's very unclear to me. And then, like you've both said, you know, Sephiroth comes down. It seems as though Cloud stops him, and then shortly after, actually, nope, she's still dead. There's just a tad too much ambiguity for like what the end of that game actually is for me to be like, I don't know, satisfied. Like, I didn't need it to be different. I didn't need it to be something else, but it's almost feels so inconsequential, and it feels like taking what for a lot of people is a super impactful, super memorable, you know, moment from the original game, from their childhood, whatever it may be, and just essentially making it the gotcha moment of this game, or like the plot twist, or, you know, we're going to end the episode here. You got to wait for the next season. It kind of weakens the moment for me. And I'm sure it does for a lot of people, but that was kind of my biggest, I think, issue with the end of the game, was just that it does a lot of cool moments in that final boss fight. One that I think goes on maybe a little too bit long. But even throughout the game, I mean, the Zack stuff almost kind of doesn't seem to matter too much. It doesn't really give us anything for a game that was kind of, you know, propped up as seeming to be a little more involved with Zach, or Zach having some more importance in what's going on. We at least don't see that now. And I don't want to say like I'm going to give Square the benefit of the doubt and like the third game is going to change how I feel about the second game. I'm hopeful that when the third game comes out and we play through that, that maybe these things that I have some, you know, issue with now, I'm like, oh, okay. In retrospect, after playing this trilogy, you know, plus Intergrade, it makes more sense now. And those things have more context. But for me, it's just like, it's just a dash too much of like, let me think about this now for the next couple of years. I will say though, as much as it still doesn't make a lot of sense to me, the like the date scene in Midgar with Aerith is like, I love that section of the game. It was very, very cool. A lot of cool visual things. Like, doesn't make sense when out of nowhere Aerith can make a portal and push you through the flower bed and you're in a different dimension again, but it was cool.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's I think that's the thing. And I agree with you. I think that it was just too much ambiguity. Like, I think that, you know, and this is something that, like, I read on Reddit, honestly, like in the millions of, you know, discussions of people talking about this game and stuff. But, you know, in Advent Children, they talk about, I guess, mimetic legacy is used a lot in the film. And it's talking about how, you know, even when people who we love are gone, like the consciousness is still there. And that's why Cloud in that movie sees Aerith so many times, is because he is seeing her consciousness. And that's something that Nomura said in an interview. And so I think that that's kind of what he's getting at with this, is I think that like there's this world where like, that's what he's seeing, and that's really what these universes are. It's like they're really like everybody, because of the nature of the life stream, right? Like it's kind of like no energy is lost or gained. It's just recycled, you know, it's that sort of thing where like she still exists in a form like that, and that consciousness is there through him. So I think that, you know, the multiverse can be looked at in more of that sense where, you know, everything continues to live on in a way, in a place. But I feel like they just didn't necessarily convey it to the extent that they should have in this game, because I think that making that really ambiguous ending there at the end and then being like, okay, and we'll come back to this in, you know, 2 years is kind of a lot. And I think it makes Zach's whole portion, yeah, it feels kind of strange, because Zach's whole thing is feeling relegated, you know, ultimately feeling relegated to the fate that was given to him. And that's kind of Big's thing too, is they both don't really understand, you know, why they are alive and why this is all happening. And that's kind of, to a certain extent, something that Aerith goes through too, where it seems like, and this is something that I wish they would have done, because in the original game, right, like whenever Sephiroth comes down and stabs her, she smiles and she almost, it seems like she knows that she has to do this. And I get the feeling that that's what they were trying to go for in this one also, is like she kind of knows certain things are doomed and certain things must happen. And there are certain people throughout the game, like Biggs or whoever, that unfortunately, like their role, I guess, in the grand scheme of things is death. But that doesn't have to really mean that's the end, if that makes sense, you know? And I feel like maybe that's what they're trying to say, is like, even when these things are gone, there's these, they're, you know, through what they do for other people and then in this other world, like they live on. But they don't do it in a way that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. No doubt. So I want to get to a little segment that I'm going to steal the name of it from Critical Role. But it's, what the fuck is up with that? So I want to go around the to each of us. And we can repeat and keep going around. But just bring up something from the game that you want to get the others' thoughts and theories about. So, Brennan, we'll start with you. What's your first moment that you want to dive into?
I don't know. I guess, like, oh, man, it's so much.
I have one if you want to think. Yes. So mine is the whole like Glenn, Saruf, Rufus stuff with Wutai and the war. Like, what do y'all think is going to happen?
Yeah.
What do y'all think about all that stuff? Yeah. What the fuck's up with that?
I think Glenn is going to turn out to be Cloud's dad.
Really? That's a that's a wild one. I was not expecting that.
I don't know why. I like the blonde hair, the also in soldier, the kind of the gruff guy that like went over to Wutai and like start like I don't know. I think it's gonna come up and it's gonna turn out like that's Cloud's pappy, papa. You know.
Interesting. Do you think we go to Wutai in the next game?
I think they confirmed that like Wutai was gonna be a part of the third game.
Yeah, because that was I was surprised that like between Integrate and Rebirth that we never touch on Wutai really at all.
Yeah, some crazy stuff's going with Wutai. I don't know. Like I'm really curious because Rufus like genuinely seems like terrified of Glenn. But then Glenn turns out to be Sephiroth, like a Sephiroth clone. So that's like,
Yeah, one theory that I kind of saw about it is so like Glenn is, you know, obviously being controlled by Sephiroth or is a Sephiroth clone. You know, I saw that maybe what he's trying to do is Sephiroth is trying to start this war in order to cause more death and like more tormented souls to like fill the life stream, and he's gonna like those are what he's using for his whispers, and like that's how he's gaining power is like sowing despair. And so I'm like, that makes sense. I could see that being a thing.
He'll show you despair.
Exactly.
the despair meme.
I don't hate that theory at all, actually. That kind of makes a lot of sense. But again, is it going to make sense? We don't know. We'll never know.
I guess, you know, to be fair, I guess I think that I have to give Nomura some credit and the rest of the team, because I also was like not on board with Remake, right? And then I read the spoilers and I was like, oh, that's really smart. So like, who knows, maybe I'm talking all this shit now and then they'll do stuff in the third game and I'll be like, oh, okay, I see your vision now, thank you.
I think like I also sort of at least hope to expect to third game finish and be like, all right, I get the things I didn't like about Rebirth now, and I have a changed perspective on those things.
Hindsight is 2020. Mm-hmm. And I think, oh, of course, it was staring me in the face the whole time. Of course, that's what it all meant. How could I have been so blind? For me, I'm curious for you two. Did either of you come across or find the giant-ass fossils in Cosmo Canyon?
I don't think so.
No, in the stone walls
by one of the like those ancient ruiny things,
like the proto relic things.
No, not pro. Because there's those like ruined buildings and stuff that you find, that you go to and around kind of the outskirts along the cliff edge, and near one of them, I think it's in like the southwest area in the rock itself. You see these two giant fossils that look strangely kind of like whales or weapons. So this kind of goes up to one of my theories with the whole, the Gi and the making of the black materia. What the fuck is up with that? But I think with them not being able to return to the planet, I think Weapon was like born and like a generation of Weapon was brought forth to help deal with the Gi. That's my theory. And they died within Cosmo Canyon.
I could be on board with that. I'm going to steal something you just said as my what the fuck is. What do both of you think is happening at the very end of the game where Cloud has the black materia and then it just gets absorbed into the Buster Sword. What do you think is going on there? Because I still don't know.
Yeah, what the fuck is up with that?
I don't know either. Yeah. No, I don't. I honestly don't really know either. Because, like, I don't know. And we also have, like, the white materia, right, that's empty mm-hmm. at the end of the game, too. And so I don't know if, you know, I don't know what materia is real. I don't know how the white materia is going to be filled again, if it's something where he has to, like, go to another. Like, I'm not really sure about that. That is kind of like a what the fuck is up with that, because yeah. I think that that's something that's going to be answered in, you know, the third. One thing, too, that I read online, I've been spending far too much time reading random threads of just seeing what people think. But sometimes people really nail it. But the rift in the sky, whenever Cloud's in that final scene, looks, I guess, a lot like when he enters his mind, when he and Tifa, like, sort through everything in, like, the original game. And like make his memories whole again. So I think that we might see that close once he does. Like, I don't know. I think that's a solid theory as far as, like, maybe things will start to make more sense. Maybe the white material will be whole then. Maybe, you know, I don't know. Because originally, too, he doesn't have the black materia at this point. Like, Sephiroth already has it and has already summoned Meteor, I think, at this point, right? Like, it's on its way.
No. That all happens in North Crater.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Because that's when he puts up the shield and Cloud gets knocked out and they wake up and then Tifa has a slap fight on the Sister Ray.
Yeah. Oh, God, I forgot.
We have wait for the slap fight.
So good. Yeah. So I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. It's what do you two think of the weapon designs? Like, how weapon is portrayed this time?
So are the whales, so I kind of took it as the whale things are not weapons, but rather just like where the big materia is generated, like they are the keepers of that, because it seemed like they had like the actual like mecha weapons also.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if like these are like proto weapons, like, just because no one's like ever seen a weapon, they just assume like, oh, those are weapons, but it's like weapons not final form. Like, they're going to like magical girl transformation into their mecha awesomeness, or since Shinra wants to capture them, like, they're going to capture one and then to, like, augment it into mecha weapon. But do you think the Magnus materia is just what they're calling giant materia in this game, or do you think giant materia are going to be something different in the third game?
I think it's just what they're calling them.
Yeah. They are very big materia. they'd be very big materia. One of the things, like the whole Tifa putting back her memory in a very similar way as Cloud did in the original, I thought was a really cool homage and kind of take a nice twist on things.
I completely agree. I think they did so many smart things with Tifa. I really loved that portion. Mm-hmm. And I also think that, and I kind of mentioned earlier that I think that they did a lot of things that make the story make a little bit more sense. And one of them was having that distrust, even from like what the second chapter, where they talk in like the hotel in Calm. Or maybe that's even the first one. I can't remember if that is the beginning of the second or end of first or whatever. But where they talk about, you know, how they both have different versions of the story. And Cloud is like, well, your chest was like sliced open in mine, and that's suspicious. And she's like, okay, well, you weren't even there, so that's suspicious. You know, and I feel like having that dynamic is really, really cool. It definitely made it a lot more realistic why there is some sort of like, I don't know, that distrust and that tension there, and Tifa not wanting to be like, hey, no, like, that didn't happen, Cloud, and, you know.
And I love how she does confront him, like, to your point, that, like, no, bitch, here's my scar. And she's like, here, this mm-hmm. here's my cut. And it going into into depth with that stuff.
And I think it makes her going and having that moment of restoring her memory like all the more important, because it's like she starts, you can kind of tell that she starts to kind of question things too. Like, okay, well, if he mm-hmm. swears this is his version and I swear this is mine, like where's, you know, kind of the truth of it all? And then she has that moment where, you know, you see her perspective and you see that truth and that is, you know, how mm-hmm. it played out. So
I do love how knowing the truth behind like those memories, how you can clearly tell who's Cloud and like the in the truck in those flashback mm-hmm. scenes, like you clearly know who's who. And I was like,
one thing I
get that
I love with that too is there's one point in which Sephiroth calls Cloud in one of the scenes like, oh, you're such a puppy or whatever. Yeah. And then if you play Crisis Core, he refers to Zach as being a puppy like a handful of times. He's like, oh, you're just like, you're such a you know, a puppy yeah. about these things. You're so jumpy, you know, or not jumpy, but you're so like, you know, hyper. And blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, it's funny because if you watch that, you're like, oh, like he Sephiroth would not have been chatting to Cloud. Sephiroth would not have been calling him a puppy. Like that was something mm-hmm. he called Zach.
Yeah. Oh, Crisis Core, little tidbit for you there, Brendan.
Okay. It's on my to-do list.
Yeah. Any other big kind of what the fuck moments for you, Brendan, that you thought of?
I mean, I brought up Queensblood earlier. I love Queensblood. Yeah. I think it's a very, very, very good like side game within a game.
Mm-hmm.
And I love so much, like if you're playing, like if you're listening to this, I'm assuming you've played through Rebirth and you skipped on Queensblood stuff. I know the game makes you do some of it, but if you enjoy playing Queensblood, there is a story attached to it, and I highly recommend seeking it out because
yeah.
it is bizarre and interesting. Weird. And
yeah.
I'm like, did both straight of you finish of that quest line or no?
Yes.
I've gotten close. Okay. I haven't finished it, okay. but I've gotten enough to see a bunch of the flat or not flashbacks, but the visions.
Okay. Yeah. So I won't say everything, especially because I wanted to make sure specifically Jess had seen the end of it because of, you know, things. But it does some interesting things, and I guess I'm curious, did the two of you think that it has any other weight within that universe, or if it's just like fun, silly little time on the side?
And go ahead and spoil it. It's fine. Really. 100%.
There's just a main character that is a late game fight that was a very fun surprise for me, and I'm sure Jess enjoyed it based on who the character was.
Who's the character? Now I'm curious.
It was Vincent.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know if you really were sure that you wanted to have it spoiled, but yes.
So you fight Vincent again?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. And then there's some other stuff with Vincent, but it's I don't know. I enjoyed the game itself. Like, I thought it was a fun game. And normally, I don't really get into a lot of, especially in, like, RPGs. I feel like I don't normally dig deep into those side games like that. But Queensblood hit all the right synapses in my brain. I was searching out every combatant. Every time I got to an area, I was very excited. But yeah, I don't
I
know.
Liked the character of Regina too. Like, yes, I did think that good. She was a very very endearing character.
Yes, 100%. And there's like some of the best goofballs in that game are in Queensblood. Like you fight some silly people, and it's
the guru.
Fantastic.
I remember the guru with the inner eye or whatever. He was one of the ones to get the vision from. That was funny.
Yeah,
or that was interesting. Yeah, they're characters for sure. And yeah, I was not expecting like a deep like a storyline behind Queensblood. So when that all started popping off, I was like, oh, this is kind of cool.
Yeah, it was a pleasant surprise. I was like, okay, I will see the rest of this.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing I really did love about the game, though, is like I felt like all of the optional things, all of the side quests, all of, you know, everything really, like their I don't know. Maybe not everything. Maybe that's an exaggeration. I'm thinking of a few things now where I'm like, no, I could do without that part actually. But I think that by and large, like most of the side quests in Queen's Blood, like they were just very relevant in a way that a lot of open world games don't make that stuff super relevant. I think that tying each side quest to a character and improving your bond with them through the side quest was really brilliant, because it's a way to actually make you care about doing them, because you're like, ooh, you know, if I do this Barrett side quest, I get to hear, you know, more from him. And like, I always love hearing him talk about, you know, Marlene or just kind of his views. So it's like, that's always exciting. You know, I don't know. So I really did like how they did that. Yeah.
So the secret word was said. So Jess, what do you think about Vincent in Rebirth? Your boy.
I love him so much. I really do. I love that they brought in him kind of not being tech savvy, because he would have been from a generation of, you know, Turks that weren't that connected, that didn't have all of that. And you know, I think that whenever he's pulling up his little, you know, keypad to have Cloud sign in or whatever to verify, and he doesn't know how to work it, it's such a good I don't know, example of that, because that's something in Advent Children. They, you know, he was like, how do I buy a phone or whatever? Because they give him shit for not having a phone, you know, and I don't. So that was really good. I think that the fight with him is good. I think having him as kind of this antagonistic, you know, not full blown enemy, but just like, oh, he works with Shinra and he's kind of this weird dude and he's doing security and is kind of a dick about it. Like, I think all of that setup was really good. You know, bummed that we didn't get to play as him, but that should be remedied in the next one, I would hope.
Yeah. I love the little remarks that the party made when they got back to Costa del Sol on the tiny Bronco, like that they had another loner or like, I can't remember what the mention was,
but yeah, Cloud, yeah, it's like we already have one loner and
yeah, referring to him, and it's like, wait, what? Oh, you mean me? And Vincent's already gone, kind of brooding out in the sun. and it's great. And so I had the privilege to go to a preview event for Rebirth before it came out, and all the voice cast ended up surprising the group and coming. And I got a little chance to speak with Matt Mercer. And like, he just lit up when he was talking about Vincent, being able to play Vincent and finding out he was playing Vincent and everything. And you can tell, and same goes for the entire voice cast, honestly, just how much they adore like these roles and are putting like investing into these roles. It is so, so apparent. And yeah, I can't wait to get more Vincent, more Sid in the future games. I'm really curious to see where all kind of the history between Afalna and Sid go, like Sid remembering, yes, and kind of like all of that, totally out of left field. It was like, wait,
yes,
what?
I thought the same thing. I was just like, whoa, they are like completely not redoing his character, right? Like the essence is still there, but yeah, like all of that stuff was so different. I was not expecting it, and I was like, how is this gonna, like, it gives him that connection to Aerith where you can see like he feels protective over her, and like that's kind of a cool way to get him involved in things. But yeah, it took me by surprise too.
Yeah, it was like, wait, what? That would have been a good what the fuck is up with that.
That was gonna be one of the ones that I said is like, so what's up with Sid and like not going to Rocket Town and not seeing Cher? Like, do we think that's gonna be in the next one? Like, how? Yeah, I think, yeah, Sid's whole thing was interesting.
Do you think, like, I think it's pretty clear we're going to play as Vincent in the next game. Do you think we're going to play as Sid in the next game?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, 100%. I think that, especially with him having that relationship with Afalna and kind of, he might see, like, Aerith die and be like, okay, I don't want to just ferry you guys around. Like, I want to fight. And I think that might be the way that works into it.
Okay, yeah.
Or like feel some sort of guilt that like, had I gone inside to help them, maybe I could have done something. like that protective, vast, like you said, Jess, Cid is vastly different from what we've seen so far. And just with how he kind of swapped and it's like, okay, I'll take you around. I owe it to your mom. Like, and I'll take care of you. And then him being like, I'll make sure the coast is clear and I can get you all out. He stays outside. Aerith dies. I can see there being a lot of like internal confliction with Cid in the next game. Like, could I have done something different? Or I let Afalna's daughter die. Like, things like that. I think we are going to get a very interesting Cid in part three. Because of the ending of Rebirth.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
I was going to say, now that I'm thinking about it, we don't get Cid's reaction to the end of the game, right? We never get any reaction.
I think we just see him sad, but.
In like the end scene when they're like at the plane. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, oh God, what was I going to say?
No.
I was thinking of something. God damn it.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I remember what it was. That's something that I actually kind of appreciated, though, is that they didn't – I like, because I was thinking about it. I'm like, oh, I'm kind of bummed that we can't play as Vincent and Cid. I'm kind of bummed that, like, we're not – you know, like, we didn't see Rocket Town. Like, that wasn't Cid's introduction. You know, we haven't seen Wutai yet. But I do think that it seems very clear that – because, I mean – in the original game, right? Like the last disc was pretty empty in comparison to the others. So I feel like they're obviously kind of saving some of those main character things, like, cause they did Barret's big thing, right? Like we've seen they did Tifa's big thing. We've seen Aerith. Like, I feel like all these main characters have had, and Red 13 too, with, Yeah. So like we've seen these. So I feel like it definitely clears up the next part for like, we can go into Vincent's backstory and like his history with the Turks and with Hojo and all this shit. And like, we can go into Cid's story and, you know, I don't know. So I'm very excited for that because I feel like they're making this, I don't know, like very anime style, right? Like I think of One Piece where, you know, at the beginning it's like you, or even like Mass Effect, right? Where you have the character's loyalty missions. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it seems like they're very much doing these arcs where it's like, okay, now this is time to see what the fuck is up with this person. And it kind of solidifies that at the end too, with the temple and with each person kind of having that trial. So I think that that's a really interesting and good way of doing things.
Real quick, I had forgotten to ask you both a little bit about this earlier. What did you both think of the twist with Red 13 and his voice and like how he presented himself? I thought it was so damn adorable.
It took me by complete surprise. I thought that when Aerith was talking to the other voice in the room, I was like, is that like fucking, is it Zach? Is that who she's talking to? Is she like, can she already see between dimensions and stuff? And so I was really confused about that, but it took me by complete surprise. And I do like, it's, I don't know. I wonder how other people felt about it, honestly, because it didn't bother me, but I was like, oh, I wonder if people are going to hate this.
Yeah, the voice thing was kind of whatever, but everything else about that transition into Nanaki was like great in this game. And
yeah,
like there are later points after Cosmo Canyon that like there's like specific moments where it's not even, I don't think it was like called to attention. It just kind of happens in dialogue in the background. Mm-hmm. But it like Barret calls Red Nanaki for the rest of the game. I don't remember if the whole party does or not, but like, I don't know. It's just everything around that was great for me. The voice change was drastic at first. It didn't bother me later in the game, but at first I was like,
yes. Huh,
okay.
That's how I felt too. I was like, this is a very high pitched voice.
Yeah.
Now I hear him. Now I hear Max Middleton.
But that is going to now make me ask both of you very quickly. Are you yes Chadley? No Chadley. Cause I am a no Chadley.
I am a no Chadley. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank God.
I'm very indifferent about Chadley.
Okay.
I'm not like, oh my God, it's the best. I also am not of, oh my God, it's Chadley. I'm just like, hey,
like,
dude, what material do you got? Cool. Okay. Thanks. Bye.
I don't wish ill upon him. He's just doing his job. But at the same time, I'm like, I could totally not have you in this game and I would feel probably better about it.
Yeah. And I will say, like, normally Navi, my cat, does not react to anything out of the TV or whatever, but I very, very sadly chose to have Chadley talk out of my controller, and fucking hated that every time it happened. It was I never turned it off. I'm sure there was a way to turn it off, and I just didn't. So thanks, Chadley, for that.
Truthfully, I think I was more offended by the grotesque, like, giant gun design that the Chad module was, that they just, like, kept on their back pocket. Like, it's like, that is so stupid to just be carrying around. You have, like, these sleek VR glasses that can, like, transport you to another VR dimension, and you have this chunky ass, like, grotesque gun thing that just interacts with towers. I was more offended by that than Chadley.
Can you guys give me 1 second? My dog needs to go out.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, I'll be right back.
But overall, though, like, and then we had, what was it, the battle Chadley?
Yeah, it was like the
girl Chadley.
Yeah, girl Chadley. Yeah, that one only ever popped up when you went to, like, one of those, like, special fights with, like, a abnormal enemy, right?
Right. Yeah, and the Chadley and her would bicker, and I'm like, I can do without this. I don't care. Like, this isn't endearing to me.
Yeah. Like, I do like when Rebirth embraces its silliness, because I think that there's a lot of silliness there, and I think they lean into a lot of the good stuff. I think Chadley would be, and again, like, I'm not, like, anti-Chadley, go away, Chadley. It's just more of, like, especially in this game, at least in Remake, it would be like, all right, cool, I don't need to really deal with you, but now Chadley's in my pocket, and now Chadley's talking to me all the time, and now there's all these world intels, and I want to do some of them, but I don't want to talk to you, Chadley. Yeah. So it was, like, just having a bigger role from Chadley, I was like, man.
Yeah. I did enjoy the little bits of, like, summon lore. I think that was one of my favorite things. That and the Life Springs, getting to know more information on the region that you're exploring, the history and kind of lore expanded on the summons. It always bugs me in these kinds of games, like, that are direct sequels, that they don't address why you don't have any of your shit from the previous game.
Yeah.
Like, why don't I have my swords? Or why didn't I keep Bahamut with me? Like, I don't get it. I just a little, and you don't have to make it a big part, but it's like, just give me a reason why I don't have these things that basically let me defy fate.
Yeah.
And I'm, like, just not using them.
In a game too, like, where, you know, it's serious a lot of times, but it has its silliness. I feel like you could make either a real, like, a serious reason or a silly reason why they don't. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
a Moogle came along and stole all of our stuff.
Or just be like, the Whispers, when we fought Sephiroth, messed with our materia and it's crumbled, or took it into an alternate dimension. I don't know. But just some sort of simple explanation. I appreciate, like, it's silly in all the Metroid games, like Metroid Prime or Super Metroid. Oh, Samus got knocked into a wall, she loses all her powers, all her upgrades. But at least that gives you some reasoning why.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. Comes with the territory. But I'm curious, Brendan, who was kind of your go-to party for Rebirth?
I feel like my party, I never actually tried to, when you had access to Cloud, was, could you take Cloud out of your party? I don't actually know if you can do that,
because
you can't move around the world without Cloud, right?
I don't know.
I never tried to, but,
like, I know in the VR stuff you can not have Cloud, but I don't know if in the main game itself you can take Cloud out of your party.
My go-to was, I mean, Cloud, I guess, obviously. And then, Aerith was pretty much always in my party. Cause I think besides the fact that I love Aerith. I think that Aerith is broken, and I love her for that. And then it would kind of depend. It probably ended up being either Barrett or Tifa the most, even though Red's kind of broken too, but and Yuffie's pretty broken. I mean, you can make all these characters kind of broken, and it's kind of great. But I think I primarily had with Cloud and Aerith, it was either Barrett or Tifa usually.
Yeah, I went Cloud, Barrett, and Red. I used them a lot, but then I think Yuffie, just with all of her craziness, like, she was one of my clutch fighters. I feel like she came in clutch in a lot of excuse me, boss fights.
Yeah, I think that I ended up using Tifa and Yuffie the most. I switch between a lot of different characters, but yeah.
I did appreciate that the game does make you play as different party members often, because it's very easy to, especially in a game like this, to kind of stick with your go-tos and then never really mess around with the rest of the party. So I did appreciate those moments, except for the end of the game. Which you kind of had mentioned, Scott, which I don't want to jump ahead, but that's part of one of my tips.
There you go. And I guess as we are getting a little long and whatnot, what are your hopes or big shot predictions for the final game? And what do you think the name's going to be? So, Brendan, we'll start with you.
I think that the final scenes of Rebirth are not real. Aerith is not dead. Cloud is actually dead. And in the third game, which is going to be called... I definitely had a name for that too, and now I can't remember it. I don't know. Revangelion.
Love it.
You're going to play as Zack. I don't actually think Cloud is dead, but that'd be kind of wild. I think that you are going to play as Zack and Aerith, though, a lot in the next game in a different timeline. I think that is one of my solid predictions.
Love it. What about you, Jess?
Yeah, I could foresee Zack and Aerith being maybe even Zack, Aerith, and Biggs. Like, I don't know. Like, there's something going on in that timeline where you're with them. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's going to continue to stick to basically the plot that we know and love, honestly. I think that what I said as far as having these other universes where people's memory is essentially what's living on is going to be kind of the thing that they hit on in the following ones. I think that we're going to continue to see these big, like, the focus on, like I said, these individual character arcs, and so I which is going to be great, I think, for Vincent in particular, not just because I love him, but also because his backstory ties like just very intimately with the overall story. He has like a relationship with Hojo and Sephiroth, and I think that it's kind of wild that in the original game that was just optional. You know, and I think that there's going to be a lot more of a focus on the war between Wu Tai and, you know, Shinra. That's probably why if they still continue to do the stuff with Yuffie where she runs off with your materia, you know, that'll make sense because she's trying to think of her country first. And I feel like that relationship and that war is going to be a very big part of the next section.
And right there, Scott, is your explanation in the third game why you don't have any of your material or equipment, because Yuffie's going to take it all.
Yeah.
That would be so good, actually.
That would be real good.
The game opens with you all just waking up from, like, sleeping out on the countryside or something, and Yuffie's gone, and so is all your shit. See, I'm cool with that, because at least it would tell me why I don't have Bahamut Arisen magically to shoot magic dragon lasers at people. You know? I'm cool with that.
Oh, I'm going to change my prediction, actually. In the third game, it is just you playing as Chadley. That's the game.
Oh, my God.
You're discovering World Intel.
Final Fantasy VII. Oops, all Chadley.
Perfect.
I love it. I think, for my prediction, I think the Knights of the Round are going to play a huge fucking, like, plot point in it. Like, whether they're, like, the defenders of fate or some shit. I think the Knights of the Round materia are going to be big.
I wonder if they're going to be the Cetra. Or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, if they're old Cetra warriors. Because we've seen a lot of, like, you know, like, going through the temple and stuff like that. Kind of the callbacks and the holograms and stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, I think the Knights of the Round are going to be a big deal. I think Shinra is going to let loose giant, like, weapon-like creatures. And I think we're going to get Vincent and Cid DLC. I think we're going to get, like, an intergrade, like, gate version.
For this game?
For Rebirth, yeah. That kind of dives a bit into what maybe Cid and Vincent are doing while everyone else is in the temple at the end.
I would love that. That would actually be really cool.
To kind of give a tease of how at least one of them will play, even if it's just Vincent kind of trying to catch up to the group at the end. Giving a taste of how he'll play when Rebirth eventually comes to PC. I think they'll do something, but for the name, I could see, like, Final Fantasy VII relive or revitalize or revival. Final Fantasy VII revival, maybe. I don't know. Something R.
Yeah, I feel like an R is gotta be the thing.
Good times. But yeah, man, wild game. It's gonna be a while. I'll probably be 40 years old when the next game comes out, and that kind of hits me in my soul, in my knees. But yeah, it's wild. Rebirth was a wild ride. Do you think we'll get a Queen's Blood standalone game at some point?
There's already talks of it. There's talks that it'll be a mobile game, and I could 1,000% see that, especially because one of the inspirations was Marvel Snap.
Oh, hell yeah.
I can see that. I'll be curious to see if it comes to Final Fantasy 14 in the Gold Saucer down the road.
Oh, yeah. I could see that happening because, I mean, they have Triple Triad.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's just so good. Queen's Blood's just so good.
Friend of the program, Jesse Vitelli, interviewed one of the directors for a Kotaku, and they it's a interview about Queen's Blood, and they have a physical, like, 3D, like, mock-up of the game. I would love if they made a physical version of Queen's Blood.
That would be cool. That would be very cool. There is a Final Fantasy VII board game coming out in August. I do know that. A Final Fantasy VII remake, Materia Hunter is what it's called. Yeah, Square Enix Final Fantasy VII remake Materia Hunter board game, currently available for pre-order on Amazon, or I guess it was at one point. It is now currently unavailable, but you could be Sonon or Tifa or Wedge or Yuffie and a bunch of other characters. So nifty. But yes, I agree. Like, a physical Queen's Blood would be awesome. More Queen's Blood. Just give us more Queen's Blood. But in terms of where you can get this, currently it is only available on the PlayStation 5, so you can buy it digitally or physically. It is $69.99. It is two discs that may or may not be printed correctly. And like 150 gigs, so it's a beefy boy, like Barrett. But after you have picked up your copy of Final Fantasy, I guess tips and advice for new players is kind of stupid, considering this is a spoiler cast after hopefully people have beaten the game. So I guess what like strategies would you give people to try or that they maybe haven't thought of? Jess, what do you think?
Man, I don't know. I guess like one of my tips would be if you don't feel like doing all of the side stuff this time around and you're like, oh, I just want to do the story. Like there is a new game plus. You can go back and do all that stuff. You know, and it's like not doing some of the side stories and, you know, getting the relationship boost will impact, you know, who you go on a date with at the Gold Saucer, but it doesn't have like a bigger impact than that. And you can always go back and you can see the other dates. So like if you're getting to the point where you're so overwhelmed by the open world stuff that, you know, you don't finish the game and you're kind of like, oh, I don't want to take a break from this, but it's getting too long. Just do that, I would say. Don't be afraid of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. What about you, Brendan?
Yeah, my initial tip going into this was going to be like get more acquainted with the other characters combat-wise if you are typically sticking to a single party, just because the end of the game kind of forces you to, hey, I hope you got materia and all this stuff ready to go for all these characters. But if you're listening to this and you're at this point of the episode and you haven't finished this game, I don't understand what you're doing. So that's kind of an irrelevant tip. So I guess I would just say like there's a lot of depth to the combat, and I think the more you because like I was garbage at like the Chadley things to like get more summons and stuff. Like some of those fights are very challenging. I think there's a lot of depth to the combat, even if you think you got it, because I thought I got it for a long time. There's still like more nuanced things to dive into. So I would just experiment and really learn how the systems work and take advantage of like synergy abilities and all these things, because like using all that stuff appropriately, especially if you're having trouble in combat, I think is like going to help you get through some of those, you know, again, assuming you've played the story component of the game already, getting through some of those harder, you know, side challenges and side bosses, it's going to be like paramount to having success there, is kind of getting into the nitty gritty of how the combat works and playing around with those characters.
Definitely. Definitely. For my tip, after you've beaten the game, you can go in the settings and turn on an option to just auto pick up resources on the ground. Turn it on. That's my tip.
That's only an after you beat the game thing? Oh, that's silly.
Why? I don't know. Square's gonna square. But yeah, it's handy. It just automatically picks up things that are on the ground. But it's good. So turn it on. But with that, I think that's going to do it for this special spoiler cast episode. Brendan, Jess, thank you so much for joining me to theory craft and discuss. Really appreciate you both coming on and catching up a bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Of course, of course. And where can people find you both online? What do you have cooking? Go ahead and plug away. Jess, we will start with you.
It never ends as far as what I have cooking. Not anything too wild, though. Just normal random things that are all going to be on GameSpot. And yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter/X/ whatever that site is, I am unfortunately still on there at a wild Jessichu.
Yep. What about you, Brendan?
You can keep up with me over anywhere pretty much at BEGROOM. We do the weekly show. So if you are a fan of podcasts and want to listen to more gaming nonsense and other ridiculousness, you can search for the Past the Controller podcast wherever you're listening to this. And I guess more the thing I'm kind of doing a lot more of lately is, as Scott had brought up at the beginning of the episode, is pairing video games with cocktails. So if that seems like something you're interested in, you can you know, find me on the internet somewhere and you can get linked over to some videos or written recipes, if that's more your thing, over on the website. I don't know when this airs, but if it airs before PAX.
This week. It's a couple of days from now.
So if you're listening to this before PAX East and you're going to be at PAX East, I'll be on two different panels on Saturday night, which is, I should probably have this information readily available, like
23rd
professional person. Yeah, I believe it's the 23rd.
Saturday the 23rd.
Saturday night, 9 p.m. Condor Theater. I'll actually be hosting a video game cocktail panel with a bunch of lovely folks who I'm sure a lot of them have probably been on this show before. And if you aren't familiar with some of these folks, they're all amazing. So you should definitely familiarize yourself with them. But that is on Saturday night. And then on Sunday, I will be a guest on a panel hosted by Jacob McCourt for a retrospective on the Nintendo DS. That panel will also be streamed. So if you aren't at PAX and you want to watch that panel, it is going to be streamed on Patch at twitch.tv/PAX2, I believe. That panel is 12:30 Eastern. So if you're going to be at PAX, definitely try to get to those panels if you can. I don't know. That's what I got.
Yeah. I definitely think the one on Sunday is going to be awesome, and it has nothing to do with the fact that I am also on the panel. But what was your cocktail you made for Rebirth?
I made a drink called the Life Stream. And there you go. It was delicious. Well, it is delicious, but I'm not drinking one right now. I drank one when I made it. But it is a vodka-based drink. It is garnished with a rock candy crystal stick, so it looks like, you know, a Life Stream. It's a greenish bluish drink. It's fantastic. It's very refreshing.
I love that.
It is a great little thing to pair with your adventure in Rebirth.
Thank you, everybody, to each and every one of you who has listened today. Be sure to rate and review us on your preferred podcast service, as I'd really appreciate it. If you have an RPG you would like us to feature on an episode, tweet at @_RPGUniversity with your hashtag RPGU with your suggestion, or share your own Final Fantasy VII Rebirth theories and speculations directly with me on Twitter @ProfessorRPG. As always, everybody, stay safe, stay healthy, be kind to one another, stay away from those damn whispers. Class dismissed.